Welcome, friends, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Optimal Health Program. Thank you for watching, and for so many people contacting the office, sending emails through the website, it's kind of terrific. I love the questions that people are asking and the fact that people are thinking in a much more in-depth way about wanting to learn about their body, maximize their health. Interesting comment right off the top. There have been companies that are marketing a big blood test to evaluate what's going on in your body. And a friend of mine recently had that done, you know, for the purpose of showing me what they were doing. And I looked at that and I said, well, 100 is a nice number. I said, but 213 to 225 is a much better number. And all the years that I've been in practice, and this is ongoing for a very long time, we've done a super, and I would call the most thorough blood test of all. So today with my staff, Gigi, Yoli, and Val, we looked at all the blood tests that we typically do when patients come in for the first visit. And it may vary a little bit depending upon a person's condition, but the average ended up being 216 different blood tests, individual tests, heavy metals, the whole cholesterol panel, the full thyroid 12-part panel, vitamins and minerals, the entire gamut of what we do. So although it seems like 100 tests is a lot because traditionally doctors don't do that, 216 is better. So we learn a great deal more about your body to help to maximize your understanding as to what your body's doing and what your body's going through, and then figuring out how to help you and change the process, change your symptoms, change the cause of the problem. And I can't emphasize that enough. The cause of the problem is where we have to focus. And I'll certainly be cognizant of changing your symptoms, but the cause is what we have to go after. So on to the technical aspect of this show. And I'm looking over at Frankie because I'm not terribly technically savvy with all the things that he is. And I have my little iPad mini here on the desk. And we decided to take pictures of some of the articles and we can put them up on the screen to do a little bit of a split screen so people can see what we're talking about and where the articles come from. All of this good information. So one of the first articles to talk about is one that I popped up on the computer the other day, and it talks about unraveling connections with artificial sweeteners and their impact on human health, a comprehensive review. Now, you can find these articles as well. All you need to do is go on Google Scholar and plug in your search term in the search box and start looking. And honestly, you may get so addicted to it, you'll be on the computer for hours, and this is what I've done over many years. And you'll start to see that there's a great deal of information out there that most people are not getting from their doctors or from their healthcare providers. And it's important to your health. It really is. So that's why part of what I want to do is to get this information out there. I want to create an army of investigators, interested people going and digging. And for many years, people will come in and hand me a good article. So we'll put these things up in the office to show people. And I was talking last week, Frankie, with you. I want to get an easel and put a bunch of articles on different pages, make it attractive so it doesn't look cheap, and then people could look through these articles while they're sitting in the waiting room or sitting in the IV room. I just want to figure out how to do that in the best, you know, fashion. So this article, which is about 77 pages long, used up a lot of my printer paper and printer ink, but it talks about artificial sweeteners and their effects on the human body. Studies have linked the usage of these sweeteners to premature birth, highlighting teratogenic potential damaging to your genes. Pregnant women are more likely to have children with birth defects when they're exposing the fetus to artificial sweeteners. And children eating them might have developing issues with gut problems, increased risk of heart issues, stroke, and cognitive decline. Now, no one's going to tell you this, but the literature's already there. Some of these correlate with the onset of cancer and the use of artificial sweeteners. So very important, and not to go through 77 pages of it, but very important for you to understand that these are bad things to have in your system. First article. Second article, if this is working, it looks like it is. Spectroanalytical research of selected heavy metals found in single-use plastics. the plastic water bottles that everyone likes to drink from. The plastic water bottles, according to this research and a dozen other studies that I looked at, are creating exposure to heavy metals, including cadmium, chromium, and there are different types of chromium. There's good chromium for your body, the vitamin, and there's bad chromium and lead. So they use atomic absorption spectroscopy, a very significant and highly regarded technique of evaluation. And looking at these things, copper was found most elevated in the plastic bottles. Cadmium was seen in straws, those fake plasticky straws that some people like to use. Chromium was highest in ice cream cups, which is really sad because a little bit of ice cream is a good thing now and then. So each of these metals can be found in plastics. So I've been telling people, try to get rid of all the plastics that you have in and around your home, and primarily the water bottles, because people drink a lot of water, and that water bottle, I think you have to go to glass. Mountain Valley spring water comes in glass bottles, and that's safe. That's been tested and proven to be fine, but you have to use glass for that water instead of using the plastic. And if it sits there in the sun, and there's another article or two about this, sunlight hitting a pallet of these bottles in these big plastic containers, some come 30 or 40 of them in a plastic-wrapped package, also will have issues with contamination and with metals. So you'd rather have your water in your home, and it's not hard to do this. Get a purified system. Culligan and AquaPure make some great triple reverse osmosis filter systems for your home, and take that water, put it into a steel container that people have water or coffee in, and use that, drink that throughout the day. But you've got to get it filtered, and you have to get away from those things that may be sitting out and creating issues and problems for you. Another interesting article as we talk about, let's see where this one is. I'm going to skip over that one for a moment. Deterioration of the quality of packaged portable water exposed to sunlight for a long, prolonged period of time. And as I mentioned, this one talks about leaching heavy metals, cadmium, lead, arsenic, and nickel toxicity. Also, potential cancer-causing agents. And each of those metals can damage your brain and any organ in your body. We talk about metals damaging every part of your body. So you want to get those things out of the picture. Let's shift to another interesting article. Arsenic has been found in many U.S. red wines. Now, the funny comment of this title says, but the health risks depend upon total diet. What does that mean? How much wine can you have? Some people have a lot more than others. Arsenic is also found in chicken, shrimp, rice, etc. So who's looking at everything that people eat? I think that the comment is important that if you have arsenic in wine, it's not supposed to be there. There's no good amount of arsenic in wine. There's no good amount of arsenic in chicken or shrimp or apples. So did they look at everything everybody's eating? I don't know. I don't think so. But I don't like the fact that they're trying to say, well, arsenic's in wine, but, you know, it may be a problem or may not be. I think it's a problem. In this study, 65 wines from America's top four wine-producing states, California, certainly the most, lesser in Washington, New York, and Oregon, found arsenic levels that exceeded what's allowed in drinking water. So if you can't have in the drinking water, why is it okay to have in wine? It's not. So a variety of these studies that continued on supported the facts, and there are graphs and bars here, and suffice it to say that you really have to be careful with what you're drinking. You can go online and look to see which vineyards have the most arsenic in their wines. And I remember looking at this article a while back, and I remember looking at the different vineyards and the different types of wine that were high in the arsenic. It's not the most expensive wines that you can get from California, but the ones that are the least expensive, $5, $7, $10, $15, $20 bottles of wine. But go online, look it up, see which vineyards have been investigated for arsenic in their wine, and don't drink them. And these are common names that are advertised on TV all the time. Not that I'm going to sit here and list every company or every type of wine, but I want you to go and do a little bit of research and keep those things out of the picture. So very important to keep the bad things out of your diet. We're going to open the phone lines today, 888-420-9272, 1-888-420-9272. We're taking calls. We're taking messages from Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, anybody who would like to call in or write in your question. We'll bring you up on the air. Your questions are critically important to many thousands, potentially millions of other people out there. At this day and age, there's so many more people now interested in staying healthy, being healthy, that are looking for this information. I want to make sure that everybody can get this information and pass it on to everybody else. That's what this is all about, knowledge and education and learning. We have a phone call. Who do we have as our first caller?
Joe from Long Beach.
Joe, how are you? Thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Doc. How are you?
Great. Doing well.
Good. I'm interested in, in warding off, these colds and flus and whatnot. I've read some articles that say that our bodies have a lot of parasites within them. Mm-hmm. And do you recommend, what would you recommend to, like cleanse these parasites out, and also recommendations to ward off these colds? I took your advice and I got the I got a vitamin C drip.
Good.
And that seemed to really be working on my body as far as,
So we've been using the vitamin C IVs in a variety of ways. One of the mechanisms is to help to improve your killer cell function and activity. And from studies, even going back, 10 years and many more so since, vitamin C IVs help to quadruple your killer cells. And some of the studies were looking at raising vitamin C orally or doing vitamin C intravenously and seeing the end result. So one of the better studies I looked at was talking about 60 milligrams of vitamin C per kilogram of body weight is what the average person should use. So 60 milligrams is not a big dose. But when you talk about kilograms, let's say the 150-pound person is roughly 70 kilograms. So 70 times 60 is 4,200. That means a 150-pound person really should be taking about 4,200, 5,000, 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And in that study, when those people did that and they checked the parameters, they saw their killer cells quadrupled. So great study, perfect way to look at it. So when we talk about recommending oral vitamins, with vitamin C, we're in that zone. And similarly, we make recommendation for multivitamins, vitamin A, vitamin D. We like to have between 80 to 100 on your blood test. So there are zones to get your best benefits from the vitamins based on literature. When we do intravenous vitamin therapy, it's 100% absorbed. It will bind to free radicals and stop them from causing damage and inflammation. A free radical will steal electrons from healthy tissue and cause damage. And the antioxidant nature of vitamin C is to stop that oxidation, stop that free radical from causing that damage. And this process of free radical damage, is ongoing every millisecond of your life over and over and over again. So it's great to have these things on board. And for many years of doing vitamin IVs for patients, certainly I've been a physician for 39 years now, we would have patients come in of various ages that had flus and colds and coughs and all sorts of things. And then typically when those individuals would do a couple of the vitamin IVs, they would find that it knocked the cold out or the flu out quickly. It would also prevent those things from coming back. And we have a lot of patients that come in once a month, twice a month or so through the winter and don't get those colds and the sinus infections and the gut problems and this and that anymore. So I think it's a great idea to just get your body to be stronger by occasionally doing some of the therapies. Of course, we test for viruses, bacteria, all sorts of different organisms, parasites. We want to look at the entire picture, but not in a single plane. What I mean is that there are multiplanar things happening in your body, indirect things happening, complicated things that we can't just look at a single thing and say, okay, this is the only thing that's occurring. So for sake of discussion, if a person's got a gut problem and they're not absorbing well, they're maybe not absorbing their vitamins and minerals. The nutrients would be deficient, and then your immune system suffers when your nutrients are down. So we have to look at this in multiple layers or multiple planes to be able to correct the overall picture. So it's learning about your body first, maximizing, correcting, retesting, and that's how we get our best result and best outcome. For a lot of patients that have had COVID, long COVID, the vitamin IVs work brilliantly well. So that makes a great deal of sense. For our COVID patients who've had bad organ outcomes from COVID, whether it's lungs, heart, liver, kidney, otherwise brain, we've done stem cell therapy that works brilliantly to help to repair those organs and put new cells into those organs, stem become those cells, and repair the tissue. There's a great deal of evidence for that. So there's a lot that we can do, but it really always depends upon that initial workup and finding out, you know, what's going on. So that's the best and first step. And certainly as you've done your vitamin IV, we want you to write down a list of benefits you feel that day, the next day, over the course of the week. And whatever we recommend doing in the office, we want people to document their improvement because I want feedback from people. I want to be able to find out exactly how much benefit they're getting. So that becomes an important part of our medical documentation, medical record.
Okay, I will.
Great. Thank you so much. Another, yes. Another question.
Yeah, just another quick question. Also, I hear like mixed reviews. Is there beneficial to take like black seed oil and celery juice and those types?
It may be. These are things that have been suggested. It's not as though there's a ton of research for these things. It depends upon what you're trying to improve. So perfect question, because a lot of individuals are utilizing books or looking at research or knowledge about taking some of these things and just randomly doing it. I said, well, what are you taking it for? Oh, it's going to detox me. I said, well, what are you detoxing? Where's the test that says here are the toxins and this product is going to bind to them, and I need proof they're going to pull those things out of your system? So for a lot of these theoretical things, there may be no absolute proof or standard that says it's going to create that result. So I'm a big fan of learning everything we can about your body, correcting all the different things we can, use the required nutrients your body has to keep your immune system strong. And if you want to add on some of these other things, you certainly can do that, because in most cases, they won't create any harm. Although that brings to mind a case of a lovely lady who lived in the city, and she would go for acupuncture and get great results with it, and she would go to Chinatown and get some herbs and teas and things. And at one point she came in, she felt horrible. She was very sick, but not infection sick. She couldn't figure out what's going on. So we tested her blood and her urine. She had huge levels of arsenic in her blood and urine. So I said, you've got some huge exposure to arsenic. I don't know where you got it from. Is there anything new or different you're doing? She said, well, yeah, I went to this place and they gave me these tea leaves. There were loose tea leaves in a bag. And I started making tea with those things. I said, okay, you've got to find a place, a lab, and you can call the Department of Health and do whichever you like to test to see what's in those tea leaves. She ended up doing it, and there was arsenic because it was not made by a company that has standards to meet, or even vitamin manufacturers have to have testing and retesting done on the machines and the calibration and proving the product's, you know, pure. So she had a huge exposure to arsenic, and thankfully, we figured it out right off the bat and chelated her, and she was fine. So pretty scary, though. But yeah, you've got to use things that that are made by companies that have to adhere to really strict standards.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your call. Good talking to you. Have a wonderful day.
Wonderful
day. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. 888-420-9272. 888-420-9272. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you could do so right now.
Got an Instagrammer.
Okay.
What do you do about high cholesterol if you are sensitive to statins?
Great question. And this is something we seem to be talking about every day, because people come in because they know I'm not a statin guy. I don't recommend the statins, because there are so many things you can do to lower your cholesterol naturally. And when you do these things, you're getting so many other benefits that it's a no-brainer to want to do this as opposed to taking a med that can wipe out your CoQ10. It might lower your cholesterol some, but that doesn't mean you're never going to get plaque, because plaque can be caused by 50 different things, as I see it, and the research dictates that. So when people come in with a high cholesterol, high triglyceride, high LDL, For people that come in that are diabetic and people that come in that are overweight, we put together a process that allows your body to become a better fat-burning machine, for lack of a better term. But I made that term up, so I like making up my own terms. So we typically talk about doing a low-carb diet because as you decrease the intake of carbohydrates and sugars, your body can burn sugars and fat better. So triglycerides are sugars and fats that are made when sugars and fats bind together in the diet. If you take the sugar out, then your body will plummet the triglycerides because you're burning those as a primary fuel. So when you do a low-carb diet, your triglycerides will drop within days, sometimes less, but your cholesterol, which are fats and proteins, start to burn down beautifully. And if you add on top of the low-carb diet exercise, where your body is now burning and your muscles are trying to get fuel to sustain activity, you're burning fat, you see the triglycerides and cholesterol come down far better. If you take a person who's whatever age, who might have a low thyroid, and you correct that thyroid, bring it back up to normal where they were maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and you bring up testosterone if that's low, you bring up DHEA, IGF-1, the active component of growth hormone, then you have a far greater ability to burn the sugars and fats and the cholesterol and the weight. There are nutrients like berberine that are great to help to decrease cholesterol. Red yeast rice has been used with some very good success. So my approach is a combination of things: low-carb exercise, correct hormones, correct vitamins, and it always works. And think of the benefits you get by doing this. And, of course, if you're doing the exercise, it should be at least half hour, 45 minutes every day. In doing that, you're flooding your cells with oxygen, vitamins, minerals, hormones. Your cells respond better because now they're being fed and all the great nutrients and things are being delivered to your cells. So this is multiplying your benefits with this plan as opposed to just taking one medication, some lowering of the cholesterol number, but then the bad side effect of wiping out CoQ10. And yes, there are other nutrients that may be beneficial to help deal with the cholesterol, but I think it's far better to do this plan than to use the medications. Always works and works beautifully. So the other things that are part of the cholesterol mechanism and plaque buildup go back many years. Yes, we know that high cholesterol, high triglycerides, low HDL, the good cholesterol, high LDL correlate with plaque. The small LDL, when you do a breakdown of the different types of LDL, is the worst, and that could easily become plaque. So LDL binds to heavy metals, by the way, to become a foam cell, FOAM, and that can get stuck on the lining of the blood vessel to create plaque. So you could look at apolipoprotein A, B, LP, little a, all of these things. Homocysteine, if it's high, can cause plaque, and that exists as a result of not having enough B6, B12, and folate. Those nutrients lower homocysteine easily and beautifully. Kilmer McCulley was the doctor back in the day, many years ago, who found that homocysteine was a very significant contributor to plaque, but when the cholesterol research took off and the researchers found that homocysteine is corrected by vitamins and it couldn't make any money, then all the cholesterol research, the drugs became the way to go for the cholesterol and still have been. But homocysteine is probably a more significant correlation to plaque than the cholesterol because there are people throughout the world that have high cholesterol and no plaque whatsoever. At any rate, so these are some of the things. High sensitive C-reactive protein is a blood test we do that correlates with inflammation in your blood vessels. Heavy metals you need to test for, as I've mentioned. All 21 of the metals. So you're just raising the number of tests up to a more important range. There are studies that go back to animals where animals that had degeneration in their blood vessels and had plaque, and even humans, when testing was done on people that passed away, where they would take sections of the coronary blood vessels, the coronary arteries, and peel away the plaque and look to see what started the plaque, what was there in the lining of the blood vessel, the intima. They found viruses, Epstein-Barr, herpes viruses, CMV, some bacteria. So we know that a virus can get stuck on the lining of the blood vessel wall, start some inflammation, and whatever's passing by can get stuck on that roughened area of the blood vessel. So fascinating stuff As I say, the list of things correlating with plaque progression goes on and on. Hormone decline, you're not burning the sugars and fats or cholesterol as well. So inactivity, smoking, drinking too much alcohol, excess sugars in the diet, all of these things play a role. So if we want to talk about effectively changing what can become progression into plaque in your blood vessel, everything is in the conversation. Everything that I just mentioned, we have to look at. So important to understand that, because if you change one thing, like just get on a cholesterol drug, what are you doing? You're covering one out of 50 things. That's just, it doesn't make sense. You're not going to get a great result. Okay. Phone lines are open. Call in to ask your question. Message us through Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Yeah, I got some.
Facebook.
Got one on YouTube.
Cool.
Does a person's body weight affect the amount of vitamins they should be consuming?
Wow, good question. Where are these people coming from? Really good questions.
And if so, what does it influence their how does it influence their nutritional needs?
Okay, so this is a really good question. I've been fortunate enough to see some great athletes in my day, in just about every walk of life. Even individuals that are pro bodybuilders, marathon runners. So the more muscle mass you have, the more activity you do, cardio and otherwise, you need more vitamins. That's, you know, a given. So when we do a blood test for someone and they come in tired and they're an athlete and we see that their vitamins are low, it's because they're burning right through them. If you expect to do marathon running or cycling, or you're competing in a, you know, professional sport, your vitamins levels have to be higher than those individuals who are not doing the activity so that you can sustain that activity. And in some cases, your hormone levels have to be higher. There are professional athletes who have low thyroid, and then they just hit the wall. But you correct their thyroid, all of a sudden, they're back to normal. So the more activity you do, and I want people to be as active as humanly possible, the more activity you do, the better. The more different activities you do. I love the idea that people cross-train and they'll ride an indoor bike, outdoor bike, do Pilates, yoga, weight training, Zumba, Roomba, you know, all these different activities. The more that you do, the better. But we still have to make sure that your body is not going into depletion with nutrients when you're doing the activity. So we see this all the time. And I can tell you, especially the people who are extremely active, high-end professional people, a very good friend of mine is a pitcher on the Yankees, and I was, and is retired, but in a similar fashion, you know, get a little bit achy and tired, correct the vitamins, all of a sudden, that function is back. You know, one of my friend's patients became he was a professional bodybuilder. I think he won Mr. Olympia probably 10 years ago, but the amount of food they're consuming, you know, et cetera, you know, it's not great for your body, but vitamin levels were completely depleted because you're working out 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day. That's, you know, a little bit much, but you're burning through calcium, magnesium, potassium, all these things. So you've got to get those levels up higher, especially before the activity, so that when you use them, you're not causing depletion. So, and again, everybody's different. You know, some people absorb better than others. You know, younger kids, absorption is great, but they may need higher levels of nutrients because they're doing a ton of activity. Older persons, 70s and such and older, they may not be absorbing well. So if we can fix the absorptive issue, great. But if not, you've got to get the vitamin levels up higher. Because if they're absorbing 30% instead of 80%, you have to raise up the nutrients. So 30% of a larger number of nutrient becomes a better amount. So yeah, it's got to be individually based on each person. Once again, phone lines are open, 888-420-9272, 888-420-9272, if you'd like to call in.
We got an Instagrammer.
Another Instagrammer. Oh, the Instagrammers are coming on strong.
What is the best cardio workout for someone with knee problems? I used to be a runner, but my knees can no longer handle it. Because I'm not running, I feel like I'm gaining weight. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, so there are good cardio activities that don't involve the jarring effect of, you know, pounding on the pavement. And I tell lots of people, I know you feel great from running, but try to run on a slightly softer surface than hard pavement, because that shock effect is going to hit your ankles, your knees, your hips, and your low back at some point. And the majority of the people that I see that have ankle, knee, and hip and low back issues have been people that have been big-time runners. And, of course, we do either platelet-rich plasma or stem cell to repair damage, ligament, tendon, cartilage, etc. But the non-impact activities, I think, work well. Elliptical machines are great. For some people that can do the exercise bike, that's great. There are some of the other things that you'll see on TV that, you know, late-night TV, these gliding things that you slide back and forth on, that might be okay for your knee. Really depends upon when you start doing these activities, how you feel. But I think the ellipticals, and there are home ellipticals, et cetera, that are good. They don't have to be really super expensive. My other comment would be, if your knees are bad, get MRIs done so you can see exactly where you have degeneration or wear and tear, whether the meniscus, cruciate ligaments, medial or lateral collateral ligaments. And certainly there are ways that we work to help to correct it and improve that. So there is there are answers for that.
Wait, let's see if there
is. The MRI is the best test because it shows you everything inside the knee. And also, there are people who do yoga and Pilates that do very well and get some great energy from that and burn some fat and lose some weight, create some muscle strength and stability. So there are a lot of things to do.
I'm curious on the picture, you know, but I'll ask you that off air.
Yes. Once again, 888-420-9272, 888-420-9272, if you'd like to call in to ask a question, you can do so now. I think this is a lot of fun, and I've done this, you know, over the radio for 35 years, and I loved it. People always call, are interested, how do I do this, how do I evaluate that? So I don't know that many people, and I don't know anybody doing podcasts that takes live calls. I may be the first.
I'd be a pioneer. I hate to say I'm in the industry, but I haven't seen it.
I may be a pioneer in the live call-in podcast scenario, which, again, is what I love to do, want to do. It's exciting for me to teach people things and help to get them back to being super fit and super healthy. Oh, so,
I got a TikTok question.
All righty.
Can food allergies or sensitivities impact brain function, potentially leading to symptoms like irritability, hyperactivity, or difficulty concentrating?
Question. Absolutely. So many things affect your brain function. And over the years of testing the majority of my patients when they come in, because we ask them a lot of questions. I ask them if they have any allergies to foods or allergies to things they breathe, stomach issues, memory focus, concentration. We ask them about all that related to hormones as well. But food allergy is a pretty interesting scenario. If you're eating something and your body makes antibodies to those things, when that food hits your gut, sometimes when it hits your lip can swell if you have an immediate reaction, which fortunately not the majority of people that have allergy have immediate reactions. But it can hit your lip and your lip can swell. You know that allergy is can be a very immediate reaction. When the food hits your gut and your antibodies bind to it, that food breaks down and gets into your bloodstream, and antibodies bind further to that, they can float everywhere through your blood and go to any area of your body. And the symptoms of allergy going through all your blood can go anywhere. A lot of people that have food allergy will have gut indigestion, bloating, discomfort. They feel like they've swollen up. Yet other people have brain fog, difficulty with focus, concentration. They forget where they put their keys, or they walk into a room and they say, what did I come into the room to do? Other people can have rash or pimples. Other people can have aches and pains in their joints. And there is a slightly different scenario, which doesn't include a classical allergy. It's called a sensitivity, where people that eat nightshades, potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, and peppers, they don't test positive blood or skin for allergy, but whenever they have those foods, they have joint pain. So the nightshades have been blamed for some people that have joint aches and pains. But traditional allergy based upon IgE and IgG antibodies through blood or skin testing does correlate with that. So it really can affect any part of your body. Once something gets in your blood, it can go anywhere. There's nothing that can stop that. And my mind is always thinking of add-on comments. It used to be in the past where we would think of allergy as the food and nothing but the food. So help me God. Lately, and this is probably over the past 10 years, maybe a little bit more, there are people who react to a food and they know it because every time they eat it, they have a problem. And when we test blood or skin for allergy, we don't see a positive reaction, but it may be the chemical in the food that's causing the symptom. And chemicals certainly can affect your brain function. We all know that. GMO are genetically modified so that the food is not the original food it was, for whatever purpose they use GMO to enhance crop growth or whatever. GMO issues can cause you to have symptoms. So it could be the food itself, the chemicals in the food. Some food may have 40, 50, 60 chemicals in it. And then it could be the GMO effect. So we have to tease that out and figure out why you're having the reaction and then break that down to see where the reaction is coming from. So yes, that's a long-winded answer, but yes, reactions to foods are super common now. Once again, 888-420-9272. If you'd like to call in to ask a question, you can do so. 888-420-9272. And we could chat. Is my co-host here?
It looks like it.
Hey, little buddy. You making sure all the wiring's working? I can see he's checking everything out. Little Louie. Hey there. You having fun? You want to come and sit up? He's moving around a little bit, so next time we'll have him sit up on top of the desk. I'll have him run the iPad mini and see how well he'll probably do better than I will. Good boy. Once again, 888-420-9272 if you'd like to call in to ask a question. It's open up to everyone who'd like to chat. Tomorrow we'll be here a little bit later than our usual scheduled time at
Monday.
Actually, Monday. Monday, usually 12:30, we're going to push it back to about 3 o'clock, 3:30, because of all the activity that's going on for the inauguration, which I think will be a wonderful thing. I look forward to all sorts of great things happening for all people. And, we'll be on at about 3 o'clock, 3:30 on Monday. Same thing, live. You can call and ask your questions. We have some questions that come from patients through the website. How do I feel about hypertensive medications? Well, in a similar fashion, if you have high blood pressure and you're in a little bit of danger because the pressure is going up higher than it should and you come in and want to be off the meds, of course we have got to get your super-duper 216-item blood test done. Start to change the mechanism. If you need to bring your weight down, we can do that. If we need to help to increase your nutrients, if your magnesium and potassium are very low and we need to bring that down and certainly bring that up to help with your pressure, we can do that. If heavy metals are playing a role, food allergy may be playing a role, we want to correct each of these things and then gradually wean you off your medications so that we can get your best outcome. So it's not as though I'd ever say, oh, get off your meds and let's see what happens. We want to find the underlying cause, change the underlying cause, and create the benefit, create the result. So, yes, we can get people off the meds, but if a person comes in, their pressure's high, they're on nothing, I'll put them on meds because I want to protect them from having that episode, that heart attack or that stroke. And everybody's a little bit different. If a person's anxious, I may use a beta blocker because beta blockers help with anxiety. So we can determine what to use while they're doing low-carb exercise, correcting vitamins, minerals, and hormones, and changing the mechanism, then we get off that medication. So for a lot of people, we use the medications in a very minuscule amount of time because we can do that once you're correcting the cause. So once again, phone lines 888-420-9272.
Someone on YouTube is asking
okay,
what your thoughts are with the red dyes being banned.
I think those dyes are all bad. there's an article here that I was I didn't pop it up on the iPad, but talking about the red dyes and the yellow dyes and all of these things causing inflammation, free radical damage, immune dysfunction. The list is long. There should be no dyes in the food. And I applaud RFK Jr. for being such a staunch advocate of getting rid of all of these things and all the dangerous things from our diet because we've been exposed to them for much too long. I think the dyes play a role in a variety of inflammatory and free radical damaging activities. So I would take all of those dyes out. There's no benefit to those dyes, having them there. And there's no benefit to having all these chemicals there. Here's another article about food dyes talking about red 3 causes cancer in animals. Red 40, yellow 5, and yellow 6 have been found contaminated with benzidine, which is a carcinogen. Blue 1, red 40, yellow 5, and yellow 6 cause hypersensitivity and allergy reactions. Yellow 5 correlates with genotoxicity. So get them out. Get rid of them. No benefit to have them there. And it's odd that this country allows some of these things to be there where other countries in Europe don't. We should take a lesson from what they're doing banning these things in Europe. So another thing that I had, which we can pop up on the screen, is a little handy-dandy grain-free, low-carb food option sheet.
I think we lost connection on that.
Okay. At any rate, it's a list of things that I've made after running up and down at Whole Foods and gathering things to show people what they could have. And I've got the list of the food substitute and who it's made by. So cashew milk yogurt is made by Forager Project. It's a great company. They make drinkable yogurt. They make regular yogurt. But it's from cashew milk. So it doesn't have the allergy mechanism that may be in cow's milk and does not have the sugar in it. It's 1 gram of carb. If you want to take some berries, pop it in there, whip it up in a blender, you have a little smoothie, but there's no sugar. It tastes nice. If you then take what I use, Orgain, which is an organic protein powder, pop that in there and mix it up, you've got a smoothie with 21 grams of protein, vitamins, cashew milk yogurt, berries, and you've got a great food substitute, a great little meal. And if I have that for breakfast every day, it's better than what most people have for breakfast anyway. It's pure. Grain-free bread and paleo thin wraps are made by Julian Bakery on Amazon. And coconut water, coconut yogurts, Great Harmless Harvest is the company there. Almond milk by Califia Farms, they're very good. Grain-free chips and grain-free wraps by Siete, S-I-E-T-E, a very big family-owned company. For those of you that like chips and salsa, little snacks, you don't have to have grain in your chips. Lentil chips made by Simply 7. Cauliflower rice and cauliflower pretzels made by The Ground Up. Someone's very anxious to talk. I guess they're calling my phone instead of the station. Grain-free crackers, Get Back to Human. Almond flour by Simple Mills. There's also almond flour made by Arrowhead Mills, I think. And if you go into a good health food store, you'll see a variety of different things made from either nut source, sometimes sunflower seed, but not grain, and you could use those to make your foods. Oat milk, plant protein, as I mentioned, Orgain is great. 365 is also made by Whole Foods. Zucchini pasta, squash pasta. Guilt-free pizza is made by Low Carb Life. That's a cauliflower crust pizza. OM Master Blend is a protein powder that's got 10 mushroom extract in that, which I like. And if I use the Orgain, I will use the OM 10 mushroom extract gummy. So you're getting those things into your system. Viking protein waffles are protein waffles made by Viking Waffles. Almond flour crackers by Simple Mills. Hero bread made by Amazon. You can get on Amazon, rather. Grain-free pasta called Skinny Pasta is made from konjac root. And crackers that are grain-free from Absolutely Gluten-Free. That's the name of the company. Cookies from Emmy's Organics. And for those people that like grain-free, gluten-free cereal made from sunflower seeds and nuts, it's from Seven Sundays. On a final note, you can take almond milk, chia seeds and the plant protein, put a scoop of that, mix it up, pop it in the fridge, and when it cools down and congeals, it looks and tastes just like oatmeal. You don't have to have oatmeal. You can have that combination, which I have done. We'll give another minute for a call. Otherwise, we're going to kind of...
Yeah, I got another one on TikTok.
Okay.
I'm going to have to get Sabrina a microphone because she's my liaison to the TikTok.
Gotcha.
Can you get CoQ10 and choline in IV injection form? I suffer from EPI and can't absorb my vitamins. I think
so. You can get CoQ10 in injectable form for IVs, but it's extremely expensive. I've thought about this for the past 7 years. And before COVID, it was expensive, and after COVID, because you don't have millions of doctors, you know, ordering this, it's very expensive. So if I can, and I'll look again, see if we can get a good quality CoQ10 injectable for IV, then we would do that. But, you know, it makes the IV almost impossible to afford. So certain things that are easy to get for IV that a lot of doctors use are less expensive. But we can look into that. All righty, friends, thank you for tuning in today. Great program. If you'd like to contact the office, 516-794-0404. The website is drcalapay.com, drcalapai.com. Certainly listen to our podcast, watch our podcast every Monday, Friday, 12:30 to 1:30 or so. And every Saturday from 2:30 or so to 3:30. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for your calls, your emails, your texts, all of that. Love to do this. Love to be here. Thank you all. God bless you. Have an amazing day.